Okay, good morning, everybody. Welcome back after a little break for Purim. Hope everyone had a nice Purim. I would like to take the opportunity to thank the members of the Shir for the very kind showing of Hakaras HaTov that I received on Purim. Thank you very much to one and all. The topic of today's Shir, I think after today we'll focus our energies more on Pesach, but the topic of today's Shir is based on a pasuk in two pesukim actually that we had in the parasha yesterday, and it involves a controversy that has been going on for several decades now, and actually is a difference of opinion between two of the major kashrus certifying organizations in this country, and that is what it takes to give, what is required in order for tuna fish to receive a hechsher. Now, if you've ever noticed, I brought in actually some exhibits here, right? So here we have exhibit A. I received this as Shalom Manas on Purim. The bumblebee tuna, which says on it OU para. Fine. Then we have exhibit B, Duggan tuna, which also says OU. Doesn't say para, there's a T there. I assume that means it's special pesa. It also bears several other hasherim. And upon closer scrutiny, you will see some Hebrew words there which read Bishul Yisrael. Bishul Yisrael means that it was cooked by a Jew. In the past, there were also cans of tuna fish. This has changed over the years. But there were also cans of tuna fish, which if you looked carefully, you would see the word Mashkiach Tmidi, or sometimes the abbreviation MT would appear in English. Mashkiach Tmidi, that this fish was processed under the supervision of a Mashkiach Tmidi. So apparently when we look at, you may never realize this, there is one other difference, and that is that the price is considerably different also. The bumblebee tuna, I don't know what this goes for, but the cans, right, the cans are less expensive, and I was told that this little thing here retailed for $2.49 at a local establishment, whereas the bumblebee cans are probably more in the between $1 and $1.50 range. Okay, but all these Hebrew words that appear on the various cans, there are a lot of knockoff brands. If you go into some of the kosher stores here, you'll see some other not national brands. And the question that I'd like to address is, why do we have all these words on these labels of tuna fish? You know, you never know, you may one day pick one up and it'll say, Chatosh of Sameach, or, wishing you broke about Flocha. But as far as we know right now, right, the designations that we find on the tuna fish would be either simply OU or OU Parv, and then this, which also has the OU, that has the word Bishul Yisrael, sometimes they would have the word Mashkiach Tmidi. The question is why? And what difference does it really make? What are the issues involved in a simple thing like tuna fish? Now we know, that tuna fish is a basic staple that is found in virtually every home. It's a very, very convenient item, and you can get fish in a can, and it is, I think it's considered still one of the healthier things that a person could eat for lunch, or whatever it may be. So clearly, tuna fish is something which is very, very valuable to everyone. In any restaurant you would go to, any dairy type of restaurant, they sell various forms of tuna fish. And one would think that it's a simple matter because the tuna are kosher fish. We have, in the parasha yesterday, we have it here on the sheet, the pasuk tells us, the Torah, the second half of the parasha yesterday, went through the laws of kashrus, as far as identifying the species, the kosher species, the animals and fish and birds. So when it comes to fish, the Torah is very brief, and basically it's all summed up in two psukim. Right? The Torah says that zeh tochlu mikosher b'mayim, the following is what you could eat from anything that is found in the water. Kol asher lo snapir v'kaskeses b'mayim v'yamu v'anacholim, anything that appears in the rivers or in the oceans or that has snapir v'kaskeses. Snapir means fins, and kaskeses means scales. If it has fins and scales, osam tochelu, those fish you are allowed to eat. And then the Torah says further, v'chol asher ein lo snapir v'kaskeses, anything that does not have these things, meaning it has to have both, v'yamim v'anacholim, v'chol sheret ha'mayim, etc., sheket heim lochem, they are off limits, they are despicable, you cannot eat those things. And thus we know the very simple rule that fish, in order to be kosher, have to have fins and scales. If they have those two simonim, they're kosher. Gemara tells us in Maseches Chulin that in reality, all fish that have scales have fins, and therefore the Gemara goes so far as to say that really the Torah did not even need to say. The Gemara questions why the Torah even mentioned that they need to have fins, because it does not exist a species of fish that have scales that don't have fins. And therefore, it would come out a very simple matter that if one were to look at a fish and see that it has scales, it is kosher. Okay, that's what we know. This is the age-old claw that we have. People love to go fishing. Very common thing that form of recreation. You catch a fish, you look at it, even if you're not an expert, you can identify right away what type of fish it is. But if the fish has scales on it, then you can take it home and eat it. That's the rule of thumb. So that being the case, the tuna fish, we know, have scales, and they also have weapons, right? As we said, they have both simonim. So since they have both simonim, there should be no question. I mean, obviously, if you open up a can of tuna fish, there is no question if tuna fish is a kosher fish. Yet there is a great deal of controversy that has existed, unbeknownst to many people. Unbeknownst to many people, is one of the well-kept secrets in the kashrus field. But there has been a controversy that has been, as I say, going on for several decades, whether one can simply open up a can of tuna fish and eat it. And the reason for this is because of the following. We have here on the sheet, the Rambam tells us in the Hilchos Machlokes Asuros, it's on the first sheet, the second source. The Rambam says, V'chein ein lochin vina v'chatichas dag she'ein behem simen. One is not allowed to buy cheese or a piece of fish that does not have a sign on it. Ela miYisraeli shehuchsas b'kashrus. You can only buy such a thing from a Jew who is established to be scrupulous in the laws of kashrus. However, if it was purchased from a person other than that, so one cannot eat it. This is what the Rambam tells us. The Rambam goes further, and I regret that this is not on the sheet, but in the Sefer HaMitzvos LaRambam, so when the Rambam lists off the 613 mitzvahs, so one of the mitzvahs that he lists off is in the mitzvah 152, mitzvah Kufnun days, mitzvah Saseh. The Rambam says that Sivanu, the Torah commands us, livdok b'simanei dogim, that we are commanded before we eat a fish to look at the simanim. In other words, there's a mitzvah, there's a chiyuv to look to see that it's a kosher fish. Ve'en k'suvim b'Torah. And the Rambam goes further, I'm not going to read the whole thing, but the Rambam says that a person who ate a fish without checking to see that this was from the kosher species of fish has been mevatel a mitzvah saseh. He has violated a positive mitzvah even if the fish proves to be kosher. In other words, it's not just that you say, well, you can't do it because of the fact that, you know, maybe it's not a kosher fish. So if you notice, when we read the psukim, when we read the psukim from the Chumash, there are two psukim. There is one pasuk that tells us the positive, that you're allowed to eat a fish that has fins and scales. The next pasuk says, if it doesn't have fins and scales, you're not allowed to eat. In the opinion of the Rambam, what the Torah is telling us is that you could only eat it if it has fins and scales, and you know that it has fins and scales before you eat it. Meaning that, let's say a person wanted to take a chance and say, alright, listen, you know, I think it's good, I'm going to find out later, but I'm willing to roll the dice, I'll take a chance. So if you would add it, and sure enough I ate it, and it turned out it was kosher. So have I done anything wrong? So most people would say, no, maybe it was not the best thing to take a chance like that. You know, maybe that a little more Yerushalayim would have dictated not to eat it if you had any sort of doubt. But nevertheless, assuming that I came up a winner, I came up and it was fine, that would be acceptable. However, the Rambam tells us, and it seems, it's unclear the Shulchan Aruch position on this, but it seems that there are indications that the Shulchan Aruch is in agreement with this, that a person cannot eat a fish until he checks it. Mitzvah lahakir b'simanei dogim. We are commanded that we have to, the fish is the type of thing that a person could check, that, you know, you look right away, you can see what the story is, and the fish could be dead, and you'll still see it, right? So therefore, the Rambam tells us that one is obligated to check to see that it has b'simanei. And thus the question presents itself that when we open up a can of tuna fish and the fish has already been cleaned out and filleted or whatever, right? So all you see is the meat of the fish. You don't see any fins or scales. And scales would be the easy thing, right? In other words, there are no scales on the fish. So how do you know that this is, who's telling you that this fish is from the kosher species? So you'll say, well, but I know that it is. You can check it out, you can do investigations, you'll find out that in all likelihood it is kosher fish. But there's nothing there that says that this is a kosher species of fish. It's just the meat of the fish. We don't necessarily know that this is tuna fish from look. We don't know, let's put it this way, we don't know that it's a kosher fish from looking at it. Right? So the argument was made that as such, one should not be able to eat canned tuna fish. This was an argument that was made, it may seem radical, but the argument was made by people who were not known to be radicals, namely two of the foremost poskim in the history of this country, them being Rav Yosef Eliyahu Henkin and Rav Moshe Feinstein, who both said that in their opinion, there is a big question whether one, how do you know? Who's telling you what this is? Who's telling you? So you'll say, well, joy is telling you. Okay, that may be so, but who says that's good enough? The Rambam says, so you'll say, well, we'll find out, we'll do investigations, and we'll find out, we will ascertain that there is no question about it, that this is a kosher fish. But the fact is, the Rambam tells us, and this is what a lot of people quote this Rambam Lalotha, that there has to be some sort of hakara. There has to be some way of looking at it and telling what it is. And as such, the question was raised, how can we eat canned tuna fish without knowing exactly that it's coming from a kosher source? Now you'll say to me, so if that's the case, how can you eat canned any fish? How could you eat canned salmon? How could you eat canned filter fish? Right? So the truth of the matter is, the question would apply in all of these cases. Except for the fact that if the fish was produced under the supervision of a mashkiach, if there was a mashkiach, a certifying person who stood in the fish processing plant, and as each fish came in, saw the fish and said, okay, I see there are scales on this fish, this is a kosher fish, no problem. And then under his supervision, the fish was packed up and shipped to us, then there would be no problem. Because, okay, I have a mashkia who's telling a Jew saw it. In other words, the Rambam did not mean to say that every person who eats the fish has to see the scales. In other words, if you're going to serve, you invite company over Friday night and you serve them the filter fish or smoked fish, you don't have to put the scales of the fish on the table or leave a scale on every piece of fish that everyone who wants to eat it should say, oh, this is a kosher fish, right? Because it's good enough that somebody who is reliable saw it. But the difficulty that exists in the fish, particularly in the fish industry, is that much of the fishing and the process of the processing of the fish take place in far off locations, takes place in the Far East or in other exotic locations where it's very, very difficult to station a mashkia, right? Very difficult to convince somebody to go live in the Fiji Islands, right? I don't even know if Chabad got there.
It's even stranger than that. Most of the fish is canned on board.
Most fish canned on board.
Right, so you'd have to have
the fish. Then you would have even more.
It has to be on the ship.
You'd have more chow. Okay, whatever. It would be very, very challenging. And even though the truth is that every major kashrus, every kashrus organization that deals with fish, and there are several, all do send mashgichim to all these places. But to get it, you know, they in one way or another, in other words, you know, whether it's the OU or the Starke, okay, whoever deals with it, they all have people who go to these far off locations. But nevertheless, to have somebody to stand in the plant for every run of I don't know that, let's say, Starkist or Chicken of the Sea or Bumblebee or whatever is kosher. I don't know, you know, whether, you know, they make, I doubt they make special runs. I assume that all of their tuna fish is certified. So therefore, to have somebody who's going to be there all the time is very, very daunting. And as such, the question is there a way to work around this? Is there a way to work around this? Or do we say that, in other words, can you simply say that, well, they're telling you, the big company, and they're telling you that this is okay, Bumblebee is presumably a very, very, very large company, and therefore they you know, they have their reputation, and they are telling you that all the fish in here is kosher tuna fish, and even though there are, you know, no mashkichim involved, but you could just go by that. Or do we say that, well, you have to have somebody there, who sees it, and sees that each fish on a fish-by-fish basis has scales on it, and that, and only that would make it kosher. Yes.
So what is like the halal of Israel?
Very good question. We'll get that in a minute. Very good question. Yes, sir.
If there's a mashkiach or a certified organization that's putting a seal on it,
right?
Wouldn't you assume that they know the halachas and that they?
Oh, 100%. Yeah, don't take it the wrong. I'm not saying it's not kosher.
But can't you rely on their hashgacha that there is somebody watching?
Yeah. I'm questioning. What are they relying on? Oh, you mean can't you assume they have a mashkiach there?
No,
I'm telling you they don't. Let me say. The OU, which we all rely on and is the premier kashrus organization in this country, probably in the world, does not have a mashkiach to meet.
Oh, does
not.
So why not?
That's what I want to talk about. okay, good question.
Yeah.
So that's
20 minutes.
Yeah. Okay,
if there are 1,000 ships out there processing,
they do not have a mashkiach to meet. Now, I will tell you that the Star K Hefsher, coming out of Baltimore, among others, but it's probably the largest, you know, of the others, the Star K will not certify tuna fish unless they have a mashkiach tamidi, and so too many other, you know, hefsherim that perhaps smaller in scale also have that interest. As I mentioned at the beginning, this can of dog and tuna, and this is not a paid advertisement.
What's the country of origin?
I'm just pointing it out for the purpose of the share, that if you look here, you'll see, you know, it looks like the medals on Gaddafi's uniform, all the Kashmir certifications that they have here, right? They have the OU, and they have CRC, and they have, let's see, what's this one? Looking glasses to see it. Isaftus. Okay, you have many, many different types of hecherim that have been, now the OU is on this too,
yeah.
Right? But the fact is that that's because they want the OU's hecher. But the OU would not have demanded what this company has as their standard. In other words, the OU gave a hecher to this also. These other guys would not. That's what I want to discuss. I'm not saying you shouldn't rely on it. I'm just discussing the issue. I'm not saying that the person should not rely on it. Yeah.
Is this issue unique to canned tuna, or what would you say about buying salmon?
So the truth is, it is the same thing. Any filleted fish, salmon. Some people want to say that you could tell from Tzvi's eye because nothing else appears like that. It has a certain unique coloring. That's salmon may be more lenient, but there are people that'll say that's contested also. Where people say that there's a way to color fish, that you can make it look like the color of salmon, and the question is, are all these things good enough? That's what I'm not here to say that this hecher is no good and this hecher is. I'm just pointing out there's a difference that exists. It's an interesting thing because it seems to us that it's open to shut case. Like, very simple. The Torah says it has to have fins and scales. Tuna fish have fins and scales. Nobody can contest that. Right? There's no question that that's true. So therefore, it's a simple thing. Assuming they didn't mix chazer in there, right? In other words, you look at the ingredients and it says that all there is fish and water, right, or whatever it is, so there's no question, right? So you need some sort of ashkocha just to make sure they don't mix in other ingredients, I suppose. But the actual fish itself should be no question. The same thing applies any filleted fish. Right now, I don't know anything about kashrus. We have here. I'm intimidated because we have kashrus experts sitting here in the crowd. So I would. But from the research that I did, it seems that often fish is shipped filleted. In other words, that in the processing, you know, nobody wants to deal with that stuff. So except for the places where they process the fish. So therefore, the fish again in the Far East or wherever it may be. You know, in Thailand, who knows where, you know, somebody is, you know, people are sitting there filleting the fish, and when they ship it to the wholesalers, or when it gets to the restaurants or whatever, it's coming filleted. The guy in the back of the restaurant doesn't have to start touching it, doesn't have to start cutting away all the junk from the fish, right? It's coming to him that way. But it comes to, so the question is, do you have to require scales? So there are some places which have arranged that the fish should come with some element of scales still in the packaging. Not that you would ever see that when you buy it from Publix, but let's say in a wholesale type, in a restaurant type of industry where they could have such a requirement. So the question is, how do we work around this? Sure, I'm going to get to in a minute. I'm not up there yet. But that's the second issue. The first issue, here comes the intimidation. The pastor's expert says.
I'm not getting serious about it. I just want, before anybody starts getting worried and not going out to buy OU products anymore, the OU, although they don't have a mashgiach tamidi in a plant, there are some very clear guidelines that they have that virtually guarantee or do guarantee what it is that they need to be assured of.
Fine. Okay. In other words, I agree. I'm not challenging that. This is a theoretical discussion. I'm not here to say, this is a shyly guest of Rav. I'm just pointing out that there is an issue by something which people think is very simple. So Rav Moshe Feinstein, if you turn over to the second page here, so Rav Moshe Feinstein wrote a tshuva on this in 1977. It's in the third volume of Yerideya, where he remarkably said that that filleted fish, right? He says in the top of the quote here, he says, "Kivan shetzarech misha yoed shera osam kodem shenikwafu." This is he wrote earlier in this. It's a very lengthy tshuva. So he writes that somebody had to have seen the fish before it was before the scales were taken off, before the skin was taken off. Shehoyel lahem kaskatim, that it had scales. Hare yesh lahatzrich sheyia shom mashkiach sheyira kol dad v'dad. That there has to be a mashkiach in the plant who sees every fish as it comes up. This is what he ruled. Now, if you skip down to the next paragraph. If you skip down to the next paragraph, he says something which is hard to understand, but, and he doesn't really address it. And that is, he says, "V'gamein lismoch bazeh al mashehisnu b'kinyan achozeh." He says one can also not rely simply on the fact that there is some sort of contract, meaning that there is some sort of commitment that the company makes. Shirak mine dogim elu sheyichdu kanu. Right, that you'll say the question that was raised over here before was that for a Moshe Feinstein of all people to say that you need a mashkiach tamidi by tuna fish seems to fly in the face of his well-known ruling, which we discussed earlier this year, when it comes to Chol Yisrael. When it comes to Chol Yisrael, right, so we mentioned, if you recall back when we spoke about that topic, there is no heter that, we came out that, according to most authorities, just simply knowing that there are no unkosher animals in the flock is not good enough. That's not good enough. It needs to be that it was milked under the supervision of a Jew. But Rav Moshe Feinstein went out and said that since there are government regulations that ban the milking of pigs or donkeys or any other non-kosher animal and selling that under the guise of it being cow's milk, so he said this creates a mirsas, this creates a great fear that the companies have that they will lose their license, they will be heavily fined if they sell other types of milk, and based on that it generates a non-sahadi, it generates a like an agus, it generates the fact that we could certify, we could testify even without seeing it that this milk is kosher milk. And therefore, as we mentioned that time, in the opinion of Rav Moshe Feinstein, Publix milk is Chol Yisrael. Right? It's not that I don't drink Chol Yisrael milk. If you would ask him, he will tell you that the milk that has the label Publix is Chol Yisrael milk because of the fact that it is considered that it's as if a Jew saw it. Why? You say no Jew saw it, but they milk the cows. But because of the government regulations. So that makes it that it's a non-tahari, it's as if we have Avis. This is what he said. So the question presents itself, then why can't the same argument be made with the tuna fish? That they are telling us that they have a commitment that they are selling only tuna, they're not mixing in fish from other species. And therefore, that alone should be the basis to say, because they'll be heavily fined, that should be a basis to say that it's definitely from the kosher fish. So he doesn't really address it at length, but he says here, this was written long after he wrote the Hetzef Chol Yisrael. And the Hetzef Chol Yisrael, the members of his family claim he never backed off. That to this day, they will tell you that he held it strongly, and that he did. I was just reading something last night written by a member of his family, is Moshe Feinstein's 25th at the yard site was a week ago. So there were various commemorations that were made, And so I was reading something written by one member of his family that he said that he knows for sure that he never backed off the heter. He held it with, he was right that you could rely on the heter. He said that in his own household they drank milk that wasn't called Yisrael. The member of the family saying it, and as such, this tshuva that was written after that. So the question presents itself that why wouldn't that be the same thing? So he says, I don't fully understand this, but he says that on the third line, the second paragraph, he says the harei hein ma'aminim l'cholodon u'ba'amira ba'alma u'masha omer shemakir shehu midad zeh v'zeh. He claims, I must have spoken to people in the industry who said that they don't have such tight regulations. They don't have the same, I would imagine the reason would be because by milk there could be health concerns if it's from, if it's from anything other than a cow. Whereas when it comes to fish, so there are a lot of types of fish that are good. So okay, so maybe we'll mix in a little bit of a different type of fish. It doesn't endanger anybody's health. So therefore, it sounds like he doesn't address it, he just dismisses it. He just says that he's not impressed by that argument. They have to answer to inspections because he claims that the inspections they're not thorough, and he claims that he knew this to be the case, that they just rely on the fact that if you certify it, they don't test the fish or anything like that, and therefore when they're coming in, there a lot of the fish is, it's very quick. The fish comes in, they process it right away. They don't leave it around standing endlessly. In other words, the fish comes in and immediately they begin the process. So therefore, you have to see it as it comes in. So therefore, even the agencies that require a mashgiach tamidi, it's not an easy job because you have to be there and you have to be in a position to see as each one comes in that it's a kosher fish, a kosher fish, a kosher fish. So therefore, Moshe said that in his opinion, he says, "L'chein mukhrab lios mashkiach." He says a few lines later, he says, "Therefore, it is clear to him beyond the argument that you would need to have a mashkiach sheyeh shom kol ha'etz, that there has to be a mashkiach." Now, interestingly, here you will say to me that, well, even if you need a mashkiach, but why do you need a mashkiach tamidi? In other words, why we know that in the hashgacha field there are different scenarios of where you need a mashkiach, and sometimes you can have a mashkiach what's called Yosef Benichtus. Yosef Benichtus means he just shows up every so often, right? He comes unannounced. Not there all the time, right? It's not easy to have mashkiach all the time. It's a costly thing, and in a situation like this, it could be difficult. It's not just costly. Who's gonna move this? Right, so you'll say, well, so we'll have mashkiach. We'll have mashkiach Yosef in Nichnas. So Rav Moshe said that's no good either. He said why? He says because of the fact that the processing goes by so quickly, right? That a Yosef in Nichnas isn't good enough. In other words, he claims that a mashkiach Yosef in Nichnas is only good by something which takes time. If it's a long process, but if it's the 1, 2, 3 that immediately you take the fish and chick chop right away, you scale it, you take off the skin, and it gets thrown into the pile. So even a yotzei v'nichnas mashgiach would miss it, and therefore he made the claim that the tuna fish must have a mashgiach tamidi. This is what he said, and this was also the psak of Rabbi Yosef Eliel Henkin Zatzal, who was also considered the greatest postic in America, the two of them together for several decades. So now the question is: so where do we go from here? So as a policy, the OU does not follow this. So the question is: why don't they follow this? Why? We all trust OU. Everybody trusts OU. So the question is: why don't they follow this? So one of the arguments which is made in support of their position, which was actually written also by a rav in the previous generation, a great European rav, Yaakov Reich, who wrote a sefer called Keltas Yaakov, that he wanted to say that there is a different issue over here that we could rely on to allow the tuna fish. And this is based on a halacha that we find in the laws of tzitzis. Okay, what does tzitzis have to do with tuna fish? So he says here, if you turn to the third page, so we have a halacha that says as follows, halokeach talis, this is a quote from the Shulchan Aruch HaRav, halokeach talis mishu yetzes, mitagar nochri, if a person buys a talis with tzitzis on it, from a non-Jewish merchant, from an Ayidon to Macy's, right, and lo and behold, one day sale, today we have talisim, half price, right, if you have the coupon, you get even more, right, but it doesn't have any certification on it, their brand, it's the in-house brand, it has the Macy's label, but you look at it, you say, well, it's just like every other palace I've ever seen, right, so the question is, can you rely on that? So can you rely on that? Now, the issue is that a talis has to be made a certain way, right? There are different halachas. We have many halachas in the Hilchos Tzitzis. The talis has to be done correctly, and therefore the question is, you know, who's to say that just because it looks like tzitzis doesn't mean that it was made the right way? So the halacha here is that afilu eino tagar limkar talisos. Even if the person you bought it from is not in the talis business, in other words, let's say you have, like in the old days, they would have fairs and bazaars, you know, types of things where a guy would come, like a traveling, you know, a salesman, and he would sell various items. So you have this non-Jewish fellow, and he puts out talisim, and he comes into the Jewish town, and he wants to sell you a talis. And the Omar, and he claims Shalokach Talizumi Yisrael Im Tzitzi Osel. And you ask the guy, say, what do you know? You know, with all due respect, what do you know about Talisim? You know, where do you come to sell Talisim? So the fellow says, well, I got it from a Jew. I bought it from. I don't know anything, but I know you guys wear this stuff. And I happened to. And I was in the next town. You know, I met up with a Jew who was an expert in tzitzis. And I saw he manufactured them, so I picked up a few, and I knew I was coming here to do my sales, so I'm selling them. So the halacha is Neman, the psak is that you are allowed to buy it from a non-Jew in such a case. Why? The chazaka al hatagor she'eino mishaker. Because of the fact that there is a chazaka that we could rely on the fact that a merchant of this type of salesman would not lie. Why not? Excuse me. So he says because he has his reputation at stake. He has his reputation at stake. If he's found to be a liar, you won't trust him for anything. So therefore, if this guy is a reputable salesman, you know, not a fly by night guy, he comes regularly into the town. And he's a merchant, and he's telling you that I got it from a Jew. I got it from a Jew. So the halacha is, says the Shulchan Aruch HaRav, based on Sakim Milk and Avram, that this would be acceptable because we have a chazaka that he would not lie. Because if he's found to be a liar, you know, he doesn't know anything about tzitzis, and he couldn't care less about tzitzis, but nevertheless, if he's found to be a liar, you won't trust him about any of the other things he sells either. So therefore, on this principle, we could buy from him. So the argument is made that this same thing would apply to bumblebee, right? That bumblebee, so there is no mashkiach to me, but they have their reputation at stake. They're telling you, well, you look at the ingredients. What does it say here in the ingredients? It says ingredients like tuna, water, vegetable broth, and salt. Okay, but it doesn't say they have any other fish in here. So they're telling you that there's nothing else in here that's not kosher. Right? So their reputation is on the line. If their reputation is on the line, you could rely on that in itself. In other words, if you find out that they're lying, there'll be a disgrace, there'll be a disaster for them. So this argument was made by the Chelkis Yaakov, not conclusively, But he made this argument. Now, the truth of the matter is, it's not such a simple thing, because if you read the, I didn't read the whole quote here from the Shulchan Aruch Harav, but if you read the rest of it, you will see that he's not so in favor of this, because he says that this would only really apply by something like tzitzis, where there's an additional factor that Zayim don't know anything about tzitzis. So it requires, well, there are a lot of intricacies in tzitzis, and you can tell from looking at it even, you can't tell for sure that everything was done the right way, but the way the knots were made and the whole layout of it, so there is an additional reason to say that he's probably telling you the truth, that he didn't do it himself, he got it from a Jew. However, if it came from, if it was some, and in other Achronim, they go to the extent that they say that if you don't have some mitigating factor like that, then it has to be that it's a concern not only to Jews but even to non-Jews. Some people make the argument, they ask the question, well then, how come you can't trust the guy to tell you meat is kosher? Right, we all know that, right? A guy can't tell you, if you go into a butcher shop and the guy, right, would be working there, yeah, all my meat's kosher. Of course you can't rely on that. So why is it different over here? So therefore, the conclusion that is arrived at by many poskim is that even the Magen Avraham, who really this halacha comes from, says that you could only rely on such a thing if it would be a concern not only to Jews but even to non-Jews. In other words, when it comes to kosher meat, when non-Jews don't care, or when it comes to tzitzis, so then you can't rely. But if it's going to be something which concerns non-Jews as well, so then people say that then perhaps you could rely on this head. Now, how this would apply to tuna fish is debated, but the OU, I believe, I had a very hard time tracking down their official position. I don't know that it's in writing. I tried very hard to get to find it, but the OU, I believe, relies on this to, however they deal with it. In other words, I think they claim that there are mitigating factors, that there are other reasons why they would only be interested in having tuna fish, and this is something that would be of interest to non-Jews also, and therefore, on that basis, you could rely on this halacha that uman lo meira chaskase, that a worker, or that a company, or whatever, businessman, would not be interested in ruining his reputation. This is what they said, yeah.
I'm just not sure.
Ramosha,
in his really said that there's no mirror.
Right.
So, we have a machlokas, and in other words, if this would be correct,
right? No,
then
so
the Chavar of Russia would say that they have mirsis also.
No, I don't think it's mirsis, and I think the mirsis he's talking about is mirsis of a fine, or mirsis, you know, that the inspections or something like that. In other words, I think that let's say there were no inspections. They had no inspections at all. So then we would say, well, then there's nothing to talk about. But the argument is made here, in other words, the Chelkas Yaakov's argument is that even if there were no inspections, but they're telling their reputation is at stake, and they're not interested in, you know, it's probably not worth it to them, or whatever, I don't know, you know, that could be debated, whether other fish might be cheaper that they could have mixed in. That's what people say against this heter, that you know, maybe there's money involved, and then therefore this principle doesn't exist. But this is what the Chelkas Yaakov, it doesn't sound like he saw Rav Moshe's tshuva, and Rav Moshe did not see the Chelkas Yaakov's tshuva, even though they were contemporaries. But the fact of the matter is that this is what he writes in the tshuva, that there could be basis to be lenient. It's unclear exactly. I cannot adequately represent 100% what the OU holds, but nevertheless, they do hold that it is mutter without a mashkiach to me. This is what they hold, that the tuna fish is mutter, despite the tshuva of Moshe Feinstein, that they, which usually they followed what he said, but in this case they did not, and they went with the attitude that based on the fact that the company represents this as tuna fish, and they're telling you that they have nothing in here other than tuna, so then even though you cannot see the scales, the fish is acceptable, and on this basis we have right here the bumblebee tuna and any other national brand that has an OU on it. It does not have, does not have to hold up to the standard of having a mashgiach to meet.
Do they?
Okay, that is the question. Yes.
Do they have, when they are fishing, their nets are catching kosher fish and non-kosher fish.
Right.
Are they, the kosher fish, are they also going being processed with the tuna?
So then the question is,
the non-kosher fish, are they being thrown overboard?
I'm not familiar with the industry. You can speak to, we have here, this is an interest of time, you can speak here to the experts, but from, I didn't plan them here, by the way, but the fact is, I have no opinion, I'm not saying one way or the other, I'm just presenting it. This is a great, I don't know what the right word is, it's a secret, or it's not well known, but this has been for many, many years a raging dispute amongst the kashrus and the OU, which hold very high standards in general. They have very, they are trendsetters in raising the standards of kashrus, that there is no question that they deserve enormous credit for having raised in many, many ways the standards of kashrus in this country, and in organized manner, and with not for profit, and all kinds of, the individual rabbi doesn't get a profit from the giving the hashgacha, which is an incredible accomplishment that they were able to work that out. So there's no question that they have, their reputation precedes them, but the fact is that in this situation they have taken this lenient position, and therefore they will certify tuna fish without it. Now let me just, hold on, because it's officially over the time right now. So I just want to cover, there is one other issue which comes up as well in the tuna fish, because so far we have not explained why it says Israel Yisrael on this can. We have only explained why in the old dozen cans it would say Mashiach Tamidi. But it doesn't even say that now. But why do they write Bishul Yisroel? So the issue here again comes up, a second controversy in the simple good old tuna fish. A second controversy that comes up is the fact that tuna fish is cooked before it gets to us. Right? Tuna fish is cooked. The fish are cooked in the processing plants. And thus, being, it sort of goes hand in hand, I suppose, if you're not going to have a mashgiach tamidi, so then there is, how are you going to work out that it should not be a problem of fish alakim? Because you may recall several years ago we discussed the laws of fish alakim, that something that was cooked by a non-Jew, a person is not allowed to eat, even if you know for sure that it's kosher. Right, the prohibition of fish al-akam has nothing to do with maybe there's non-kosher ingredients. Has nothing to do with it. Right, if you left your housekeeper with a steak, if a woman went to work in the morning and said to her non-Jewish housekeeper, please, I want to serve this for supper, I want to serve chicken or steak for supper, can you please cook it for me? So that would not be allowed. You couldn't eat it. Because you say, well, I only have kosher meat, there's no question. And there's no question that all the ingredients are kosher. It doesn't matter, because the rabbis banned, it's a zeir d'rabbanan, that the rabbis banned fish alakim, right? Because of the fact that it would lead to Jews and non-Jews, we discussed this at length, it would lead to socialization between Jews and non-Jews, and ultimately the possibility of intermarriage and different things. And therefore, you have a prohibition. So now the question is, well, the tuna fish is cooked, and it's not being cooked by Jews. Right? So if you had a mashgiach tamidi, so then you theoretically, it's not automatic, but theoretically, you could arrange that this fellow should turn on the oven or something, or do something to, you know, if you recall, when we discussed this way back, there is a big dispute amongst Ashkenazim and Sfarim in the laws of Fish Alakim. Sfarim are much stricter. Right? Ashkenazim basically hold that as long as a Jew is involved in anything at all, it's good enough. And Sfarim hold that you really have to be directly involved in the cooking. In other words, in the Bishul Akam, Ashkenazim are more lenient. But even for Ashkenazim Jews, if the cooking is being done in Thailand by non-Jews, how are you allowed to eat it? So this is a second issue which comes up. And again, on this tuna fish, it does not say Bishul Yisroel. So how did they get around that problem? So the answer to this is that we find here on the second sheet, the second quote, you may recall that the prohibition of Bishul Akum, the prohibition has two great leniencies. That when the rabbis made the prohibition of Bishul Akum, they made two big exceptions. They said that food cooked by a non-Jew is prohibited except, it says here in the Shulchan Aruch, Dover She'enu Nechol Kamo Shu Chai. The first exception is if the food can be eaten raw. If it could be eaten raw, so then you're not really gaining that much from the cooking, then the rabbi said that that's okay. That's alright. Okay, so therefore, something that could be eaten raw, let's say a baked apple, if it was baked by a non-Jew, with assuming the ingredients, if you knew the ingredients were kosher, you could eat it because of the fact that an apple could be eaten raw. It didn't have to be cooked. So even though it's enhanced, if you bake it, but nevertheless, that since it could be eaten raw, it's permissible. That is heter number one. Now that presumably would not apply to the tuna fish, unless I don't know much about sushi, but that's I think a different. Maybe not. Maybe they have sushi from tuna fish also. I don't know. They use raw tuna also. Okay, but okay. So maybe. What's that?
Talking about the general dairy that most of the world uses. That
okay, so thank you. So the argument against the sushi is that most people don't eat tuna fish in that form, and therefore, since tuna fish is not commonly eaten that way, so it would not be considered that it could be eaten raw. But the second thing is more where there's a possible heter. Because the second exception to the law of Bishul Akum is the Gam Olal Shulchan Malach. It has to be considered prestigious. It has to be prestigious food to such a degree that it would be served to prestigious people. The expression that's used in the Chazal is that it would go on a king's table. Okay, that you would serve it to a king. It has to be choshev. If it's not choshev, so therefore, in such a case, you would be allowed to eat it even if it was cooked by a non-Jew. Now here, the argument can be made that, well, canned tuna fish is not kosher, right? Nobody, President Obama at a state dinner, even though they might serve tuna steaks, right, that's served in even the fancy restaurant would have that, could be pricier as well. But they're not going to open up even the Duggan, the 249, right? They're not going to open up the can and serve that to the Prime Minister of whatever, Prime Minister of Sweden, right? The King Sweden, Prime Minister of France, right? They're not going to serve him this stuff, right? So therefore you'll say that there's no problem of Shulchan Malachim because of the fact that it's not considered prestigious. Right now, this point, much in the same way that Wise potato chips or Lay's potato chips are not Bishul Yisroel, right? But the fact of the matter is that we eat them, right? Most people eat them without any hesitation, they have no you, because potato chips are not kosher. Even though potatoes are kosher, but potato chips are not kosher. So therefore, it's beyond the problem officially struck. However, I saw on the Star K website that Rabbi Heinemann claims that when they cook the fish of tuna fish, apparently it's cooked in two stages. But the first stage of the cooking of the fish is done right after they cut off the skin. In other words, before it got into the can, it's cooked again in the can. But before it gets into the can, the whole fish is cooked. And therefore the argument could be made that at that point, that the fish that's there is Olal Shulchan Malach. In other words, when they cooked it with the steaks also. In other words, the tuna steaks that are one day going to be sold in some restaurant for $23.99 as a main course, right? So they're also on the fish when they're cooking it. In other words, had they only cooked it when it was in the can, so you'll say, well, that's likewise potato chips. That even though the potatoes are served at steak dinners, but they're not served as chips. They're not served in that manner. And therefore, wise potato chips can be eaten even though they're not visually thrown. However, he claims that with the tuna fish, it's not so. Because when they cook it originally, it's the whole fish together with the good parts. And therefore, that is Olal Shulchan Malachim. So when it was cooked the first time, it's Olal Shulchan Malachim. So even though when it comes to us, it's not, but originally, it was. Again, what the OU response to this, I don't know. I would imagine that their response to this would be, but at the end of the day, I guess they'll say, but so what? But when it comes to the part that came to you, not that wasn't kosher. So that wasn't kosher. So then when it was cooked, it's not a problem. That's right. No, that's something else.
Fish, when the first time as soon as it comes off the trawler,
yeah,
it's only cooked about 15-20%, not even a quarter, just enough to heat it up so they can pull the bones out.
So you're saying it's not considered in any way edible at that point.
It's not edible.
Okay. All right. So I don't know. So okay. So you have a controversy. I don't know. So to sum it up, the point is just simply this: we have therefore different standards. And it's an interesting thing that amongst respected conscious organizations on such a simple thing, you would say, my gosh, what could be wrong with tuna fish? Right? It's such a simple thing. But yet, we have a big difference of opinion. And the OU will allow, they take the lenient position that they will allow the tuna fish without the mashkiach, they will allow it without the fish of Yisrael. It's all good. The other Hefsherim, or at least let's say the Star K on the national level, the Star K will say that no, that we need to have a Mashkiach there, and we need that there should be Bishul Yisroel. Now, theoretically, it could be, I don't know, but you could have Bishul Yisroel without probably having a Mashkiach there all the time. They could probably work that out if they tried hard enough. It doesn't have to go together. But if you had a Mashkiach to me, it would definitely make life easier. But whatever the case may be, here you have the difference of opinion. So if you ever hear people say that I eat this tuna fish, I don't eat this tuna fish, and you say, well, what kind of nonsense is this? How could you argue such a simple thing with ingredients that are just essentially fish and water or whatever, right? What's the big deal? So here you have a fascinating issue in the contemporary kashrus industry that involves halacha, determining the Rambam's fear that a person has to be able to eat. In order to eat fish, you have to positively identify that it's a kosher fish. It's not just good enough to say, I assume it is. You have to actually look and see, and if a person didn't look and see, it wouldn't be good if the Mavakal Mitzvah say, even though the fish proved to be kosher. So how is that dealt with? So the OU deals with it their way, the Star K deals with it their way. Everyone is free to do as they wish.